politician, yes? The band has started up again at the other side of the fountain, and I tossed the blue marker onto the table and shook my hand in an attempt to get some blood back in it. Yep, but I'm pretty lousy at that part of the job, to be honest. What part are you good at? I'm still working on that. Hayden appeared through the crowd, glad-handing as he came with his own mask pushed up on his head. That was the worst speech I've ever heard. That seems to be the consensus, so the next presentation we have to do, one of you can do it. I reached over and opened a soda from the table and stood, leaning on the broken portion of the fountain, and having a sip as I glanced around at a street party that looked nothing like it was winding down. Is this going to go on all night? Probably. When will some of these misguided pilgrims begin their journey to the mountain? Sometime tomorrow during the day. Why don't we just go up with them and use the crowd for cover? Bianca moved past us, glancing at the throng as another individual approached with one of the tiny footballs. She shook her head and turned the man away. Because you stand out like a polar bear. There was some noise from the other side of the fountain, beyond the band and the people dancing. Probably a fight. So, we leave early? Si, at sunup. Hayden fanned some fingers at the municipal building where we were staying. We will pull into the alley behind you and leave at 5:30. There was more noise at the fringes of the crowd, and I was about to mention it when I heard the unmistakable sound of a quick burst from an automatic weapon. People screamed, and the crowd seemed to shift en masse, but there was no more shooting. What the hell? Hayden leaped up on the fountain. There are some men approaching, and they are heavily armed. Just as he'd finished speaking, Alonzo appeared in the crowd, waving and pushing people aside to get to us. It's men. Bidart's men. Hayden stepped down. We will just continue with the illusion we have created. How many of them? A half dozen, at least. Peering through the crowd, I could catch glimpses of a group of men, some of them carrying bottles of what I assumed was liquor. Leaning to the side, I could see the strikingly handsome man who appeared to be the leader, an individual who was out of place with blonde hair poking out from under his ball cap. David Culpepper. This was the man I was certain had killed Ricardo, my daughter's housekeeper's nephew, and possibly the one who had actually kidnapped Alexia and Katie. I'd only met him once, but he would most certainly know me on sight. I reached over and took Aiden's mask, removed my hat, and slipped the disguise over my face. The white guy in the front, his name is Culpepper, and we've met. He'll know who I am. Turning, I slipped my arm around Bianca and pulled her close as the group of men broke through the crowd and Culpepper pointed toward us with what looked to be an M16. He staggered a little and took a swig from a mezcal bottle in his other hand. Great. Drunk, psychotic sociopaths with automatic weapons. He stopped about 12 feet away and extended his arms, threw his head back and screamed, "How about them cowboys?" A few of the men behind him, who were also carrying AK-47s, fired a few rounds in the air as punctuation. He grinned a crazy smile with a lot of teeth, and it was all I could do to keep from leaping over the table and taking him by the throat. "Bob Lilly," he turned to the group behind him, "number 74. His face swiveled back to me. "Mr. Fucking Cowboy!" I released Bianca and stood straighter. He staggered forward a little closer, finally clutching the edge of the table for support. "My uncle used to tell me stories about you." I nodded, but didn't say anything. 29-yard sack of Bob Greasy in Super Bowl VI, a fucking NFL record. I adopted a gravelly voice and gently placed a hand on Bianca's shoulder. "Excuse me, but my wife..." He studied me for a second, his wobbling eyes finally focusing. "Aw, oh, fuck. I mean..." He set the bottle on the table and stepped back and actually swept the hat from his head and placed the rifle across his chest, bowing just a bit. "I am dreadfully sorry, ma'am. You'll have to forgive me, but I've been down here in this godforsaken country, in this den of killers and thieves so long that I've forgotten my manners." Bianca inclined her masked face at him. "I was brought up better, I can promise you." He turned back to me. David Culpepper, sir. A proud son of Texas. Throckmorton, to be exact. And I bet that rings some bells with you now, don't it? Actually, it didn't. Absolutely. Well, you played your senior year. He raised a palm. Greyhounds. We struck hands, and I nodded. Greyhounds. He looked at me questioningly. Something wrong with your voice? I gestured toward my throat, but Aiden quickly stepped beside me. Mr. Lilly gave a wonderful speech and has been talking with fans all evening, and I'm sure his voice has reached its limits. Culpepper nudged the mezcal bottle toward us. Well, hell, give him some of this. That'll cure him. He turned to Bianca. Excuse my French, ma'am. Mr. Lilly doesn't drink.
Really?
After a second, he turned back to Aiden. You're a little far south, aren't you, Doc? Aiden squared off with the armed man, and I had to respect his nerve. We are escorting Mr. Lilly and thought it best that we have some native speakers with him, in case you haven't noticed there are unsavory characters in the vicinity. Culpepper picked up the bottle again and took another swig.
That's so.
His eyes swiveled to me again.
Well, just don't let this son of a bitch work on you, Mr. Lilly. This witch doctor's worked on a couple of ours, and they didn't make it, and I'm still not sure if it might have been intentional.
I would have thought you were preparing for the festival in Las Bandejas. His eyes went back to Martinez.
Yeah, well, the boss don't know it, but we decided to come down here and see Mr. Cowboy for ourselves, you know?
Well, not that you have seen him.
Hey, there's no reason to be like that, Doc.
He swung the M16 toward Aiden.
You keep acting like that, and we're going to get the feeling you don't want us around.
He pressed the muzzle of the automatic against Aiden's chest.
That's not the case, is it, Doc?
Unfortunately, I've found myself in a lot of situations like this, in wartime and not. I don't take a particular pride in knowing when a man is going to pull the trigger, but I knew that David Culpepper was preparing to do just that. With one quick move, I snatched the weapon away from the drunken man as the group behind him leveled their guns on me, the sound of chambering rounds the only noise. Undeterred, I flipped the rifle over and, with the power of rote muscle memory, punched the button and dropped the magazine onto the table. Cocking and releasing the safety, I squeezed the trigger, then cocked it again and set the safety. Quickly pressing the button, I removed a screw, freeing the lower receiver assembly. Removing the charging handle, I slipped out the bolt carrier, the firing pin, retaining pin, removed the bolt cam pin, and plucked out the bolt, lining the parts up on the white tablecloth like a display. The entire action took about 19 seconds. Semper Fi.
Damn!
Culpepper stared at his disassembled rifle and waved for the others to lower theirs.
You weren't in the military, were you?
I shrugged.
Damn!
He took the last swig from the bottle of mezcal.
You got a bag? I'm too fucking drunk to put it back together.
He stuck out a hand.
I just want a shake, Mr. Lilly.
I paused for a second and then gave it to him. He squeezed for a moment and then looked through the holes in my mask.
You sure are in good shape to be as old as you are.
I still work out a little.
I stepped toward Bianca and slipped an arm around her waist in an attempt to indicate that the evening was over. He continued to smile at me.
Well, maybe we can have breakfast tomorrow or something.
Figuring we'd be gone long before he was up, I agreed.
I don't see why not. We'll be around.
Good.
He raised a fist.
Go Greyhounds!
I returned the cheer.
Go Greyhounds!
He nodded, and then half turned away, motioning to one of his underlings as he pitched the bottle into the fountain, where it shattered. He gestured toward his disassembled rifle.
Pick that damn thing up and let's go find something more to drink.
He watched, as they did as he said, and then they all disappeared into the crowd. Aiden leaned into me and grinned, breathing through his teeth.
Let's go watch a soccer game, Mr. Lilly.
I closed the door behind us and slid the mask off my face, happy to be rid of the thing.
How did I do?
Bianca slipped off her own mask and looked up at me.
Much better than the speech.
Not knowing much about soccer, I'd stood and cheered whenever everybody else did, and seemed to have made it through the game without committing any terrible errors in sport etiquette. I hadn't seen Culpepper or any of his men at the event, and figured they'd either drunk themselves into oblivion or had found some other way to entertain the baser instincts of their natures. Fatigue was seeping into every part of my body, and I felt like I was wading in water as I turned and sat on the foot of the bed. I looked at my boots and wondered what the hell I was doing. "You must be exhausted." Raising my face, I looked up to find her standing over me.
"I am."
"That was very brave, what you did to save my brother. It was also very foolish." She stepped in closer and rested her hand on my shoulder. "But thank you."
"That's kind of my trademark, the foolish thing."
She leaned in and placed my head on her breast. And all I could think about was the sound of her voice and how good she smelled. "You should come to bed." It took a few seconds to summon the strength and the will, but I pulled free and stood straight.
"I've been thinking about that, and I think maybe I should go into one of the other rooms and sleep."
She placed her hand on my chest and looked up into my eyes. "I promise I won't take advantage of you."
"Yep, well, I don't know if I can make that same promise."
Her head kicked sideways, and she stepped in, draping a hand around my neck and pulling my face down to her lips, where she kissed me very softly, and then turned the side of her face and rested it on my chest.
"That would be even better."
Taking her shoulders, I gently stood her back up and looked at her.
"It's not that I don't find you painfully attractive."
"I guess I'm not much of a bruja, am I?"
"Oh, yes, you are."
Her eyes dropped.
"There is someone else?"
I thought about Vic. "There is, at least I think there is, someone else."
"If you think, then it must be so."
Feeling even more like an idiot, I patted her shoulders and stepped back. I'm not sure why I picked up the gym bag from the bed, but I did, and then stepped around to get a pillow and a cover I could use. Reading my mind, she started pulling the light cotton blanket from the foot of the bed.
"Take this. The night is warm enough that I only need the sheet."
"There's another image I can carry through the night." Gathering it from her, I stood there for a few seconds. "I'll see you in the morning."
Taking the mask from the bed, she reached up and took off my hat and slipped the thing over my face again.
"Your disguise."
Looking through the eye holes, I took in the curves at her hips.
"Right.
And if you change your mind?"
She turned and began unzipping the flamenco dancer dress she was wearing. I took advantage of the moment to bolt for the door. It was dark in the hallway, only a few of the candles on the stairs remaining lit. I stood there in the flickering amber light and felt like a stranger in a strange land. My job had some relatively strict parameters, and even though I sometimes stretched them a bit, I was pretty much off the map now. There was a buzzing in my head that I couldn't seem to shake, a feeling that I was doing something wrong. Maybe I shouldn't even be here. Maybe I was endangering my daughter's life with all this cowboying. Maybe I should have stayed in El Paso for the backup that was probably desperately attempting to find me. But I knew the clock was running, and whatever it took, I was going to see this through. I turned to find the door to the other room and stared into the barrel of a 5.7x28mm 5.7 pistol held in the slightly unsteady hand of David Culpepper.
"Bob Lilly didn't do his senior year with the Greyhounds. There was a drought, and his family moved from Texas to Portland, Oregon."
I took a breath.
"You know, I always thought I should have paid more attention to high school football in Texas."
"Friday night lights, motherfucker.
He gestured toward the doorway of the next room. I raised my hands slightly, still holding the gym bag, and sidestepped out of the hallway, my boots crunching glass from the tall broken windows, where a slight breeze from the desert blew the torn and sun-faded curtains inward. Still holding the pistol on me, he gestured again. "Take off that stupid mask." I took my hat off and transferred it to the bag hand and pushed the mask up. "I thought you were drunk." He shrugged as he glanced both ways in the hallway before following me in.
"Well, there's drunk, and then there's drunk."
Once again with the pistol, he gestured for me to back up some more.
"Now, if it was up to me, I'd just shoot your big ass right now. But the boss wants you alive, so I guess we gotta figure things out.
You got any handcuffs with you?" The way he was looking around, I was pretty sure that he was alone, maybe because he wanted the credit, or maybe because the others really were drunk. "No."
"A lawman without handcuffs?"
"I told you no."
"You wouldn't lie to me, would you?"
I didn't say anything.
"What's in the bag?"
"My jock. You want to sniff it?"
"Funny."
He raised the semi-automatic and aimed it at my head and then motioned with it toward the bag.
"Drop it in front of you."
I did as he said, and from the clunk it made on the tile floor, it was easy to discern that it wasn't sports equipment. He smiled and slowly kneeled down to check it out for himself.
"The boss didn't have much doubt that you'd be coming."
"Where's my daughter?"
"She's up at the monastery."
"She better be safe." He glanced at the gun, palmed in his hand.
"Oh, what?"
"Did you kill Ricardo?"
"Who?"
"Alexei's nephew." He actually thought about it.
"The housekeeper?"
I lowered my arms just a bit, but he didn't seem to notice. "What, you kill so many you can't keep track?"
"You know, I do."
He nudged his ball cap back on his head with the barrel of the gun and grinned up at me.
"He was pretty easy, but I gotta tell you, herding that monster of an aunt of his was a real pain in the ass."
"She's not a part of all this." He barked a laugh and bumped the sights of the FN on his teeth.
"Nope. The boss took her to look after your daughter. He figured it'd be a lot easier if she had somebody she trusted with her, but in the end, I'll end up doing her, too."
"You're gonna do me?"
"Nah. I told you the boss has special plans for you."
He reached forward with his free hand to unzip the duffel.
"But hey, is that hotshot second-in-command of yours on her way down? The boss wants her skinned and on a wall, but I'd like to entertain her a bit before he does it."
He continued grinning.
"White meat's kind of hard to come by around these parts."
He had the gun, but I knew he'd be in trouble if he shot me without Bedard's consent. I guess he figured I was old, or that I was tired, and he was right. But I was also highly motivated to kick his teeth in, which I did. He clamped his jaw, saving the ivories, but I kept moving forward, half-stepping and falling on him as he fell backward. I tried to get a knee on his gun arm, but he was young and probably a lot better trained in hand-to-hand than I was, so I settled for the front of his shirt. He swung like a spider monkey and wrapped an arm around my neck. I threw myself backward, somehow still blocking his gun arm. The wall shuddered and splintered, the plaster and lath exploding in the air, but he'd clamped his legs around me and was beating his head against the back of mine. I spun and made for the other wall, but tripped over the gym bag and fell, luckily landing on his shoulder. I had the satisfaction of hearing the pop as it dislocated, and he screamed, but somehow still held the gun. I put more pressure on that arm and rolled onto my back on top of him. I began slamming my head back, feeling the crunch of his nose, and wondered just how much it was going to take to get him off me. I just raised my head for another slam when he managed to snatch his gun hand away so that I had to roll in that direction just to keep him on the floor. That proved to be a mistake because it left his legs free, and he braced both of them against my chest and with a surprising amount of strength was able to push me away. I was near enough to grab his leg again, so I pulled him toward me, happy that I wasn't looking down the barrel of the 5.7 by 28 millimeter again. When I looked up, I could see the FN was lying amid the broken glass by the open doorway. I kept pulling him toward me and away from the gun,
but he got a desert boot free and cropped me a good one on the chin. I reached up and caught the waistband of his pants, but they gave way, and he continued slithering bottomless toward the doorway and the gun. He paused in the effort just long enough to smile a bloody grin at me. I scrambled onto all fours after him, but it was a foregone conclusion that he was going to get the semi-automatic. I'd pretty much figured that I had done enough damage to him that he was unlikely to forgive and forget, even though Bedard had told him that he personally wanted to kill me. It was strange, though, because when I reached forward and touched his legs again, they weren't moving. Slowly I raised my face and saw Culpepper's naked ass in the moonlight, and above that, the even more impressive sight of a naked Bianca kneeling in the doorway with the FN pistol in her hands, smiling as she pressed the barrel against his forehead.
Hijo de puta, how about them cowboys?
Chapter 6. As fast as I went, I couldn't seem to catch up with myself. I was unmoored and disconnected with the feeling that I wasn't in control anymore. You look like shit, amigo. I'd given Aiden the oil lamp I had carried, and had raised the brim of my hat so he could get a clear view. Yep, well, you should see the other guy. I have, actually. He followed me into the bedroom where Culpepper was tied to one of the metal office chairs with a bunch of wire hangers I'd found in the closet. I think you are cutting off the circulation to his hands. He's lucky I don't wrap one around his neck. Dressed in jeans and a white blouse, Bianca stood off to the side, along with Alonzo. I took a breath. You okay?
Yes. Where were you?
I had to go check something. I turned to Alonzo. We're out of here in an hour? He looked nervous, but nodded. Or less, if we can manage. I gestured toward Culpepper. That's up to him. I leaned forward with my hands on my knees and looked at him. How you doing there, Tex? He raised his bloody face, some of the glass shards from the floor still stuck in his flesh.
Fuck you!
Rip-roaring and ready for love, right? Culpepper spat and grinned, flipping the strands of hair with dried blood from his face.
You better let me go.
I took a deep breath, still winded from the fight and then the stairs. Of all the things that are going to happen, I don't believe that's one of them.
I'm telling you that if you know what's good for you.
Look, we can do this the easy way, or we can do it the hard way. I straightened and looked down at him, picking a few more glass chips from my hands. I'm going to ask you a few questions.
Save your breath.
I paused for a few seconds. I promise I'll keep them short so you can answer with one or two syllables. He strained against the wire as he enunciated each word.
Fuck you!
I stared at him a moment more and then stepped around, turning the chair and dragging him out of the room backward. I guess we're doing it the hard way. I glanced at Bianca and Alonzo. You two stay here. The back legs of the metal office chair scraped on the tile surface as I pulled him toward the stairs. Come on, Aiden, I need someone to carry the lamp. Culpepper thrashed a bit, but I'd wired him in good.
Where the hell are you taking me?
What do you care? I think he was a little worried I was going to pitch him off the balcony, but didn't breathe any easier as I started dragging him down the stairs, the metal chair with him in it sounding like the 1812 Overture as we crashed our way down. Aiden dutifully followed as I made a right and ventured farther into the building, past some counters that had been broken up and a few more vacant offices cluttered with debris. There was another set of stairs to my right, and I followed the same procedure as we descended into the depths of the building. Aiden's lamp, the only light. I'm pretty sure I'd loosened a few more of Culpepper's fillings by the time we got to the bottom.
Where the hell are we going?
I dragged him past a short hallway lined with empty shelves to our final destination. Propping the chair back up, I turned him so that he could see the large steel door of the vault. The doctor entered and stood to the side, still unsure of my intentions, but holding the lamp high so that we could all look around. I towed some debris as I pulled Guzman's brass knuckles from my back pocket. When felons were induced to talk, they first were shown the instruments of their torture.
What is that supposed to mean?
I slipped the brass onto my hand, glinting menacingly in the lamplight. The difficulty we're having here is that right now you're more afraid of Bedard than you are of me. Without damaging you so much that you can't tell me what it is that I need to know.
Fuck you.
I punched the corner of the wall, pieces of concrete flying and filling the air with dust. On the other side of the doorway, Aiden coughed and quickly pulled his shirt over his mouth. Primitive, but damn capable of these things. I think it was the Sikhs in the 18th century that came up with the basic design of the Sherpanja. But they really came into their own in our country during the Civil War. There wasn't hardly a self-respecting soldier who didn't have a set of these made out of brass or cast iron, or even if they had to carve them out of wood or cast them out of lead bullets molded in dirt.
Fuck you.
I stepped toward him. Now, you're going to tell me all the things I need to know, like where exactly my daughter is, Bidart's plans, the basic layout at Monasterio del Corazon Ardiente, his manpower and armaments, and anything else I can come up with. He smiled.
I don't believe you will use those.
I stood there, not moving. His head dropped, and he laughed.
One of the things I'm good at is knowing how far people will go, and you, Sheriff, aren't capable of following through on this threat, even with a piece of shit like me.
I could feel the muscles bunching in my right arm, calculating the distance between the two of us and the trajectory and amount of force it would take to loosen his jaw without shattering it. There was part of me, that vengeful,